Where did you want to be the morning of September 11th, 2001? Like many of you, on September 11th, 2001, I was safe in bed here in Los Angeles when my cell phone started to ring. And ignoring the first few rings, because as you remember, here in Los Angeles, it was about 6 a.m., I finally picked up the phone. And a friend living in New York City at the time screamed through the phone, "Turn on the news. A plane has just hit the tower." Dumbfounded and dazed and confused, I turned on the news and realized that the world was changed forever. But what I haven't told you is exactly where I was on that fateful morning and exactly where I wanted to be. As many of you know, I graduated from UCLA, and in my last year of school, for various reasons, I lived at the Bight, the UCLA Jewish co-op, if you will. The Bight sits on Landfair Avenue in the middle of Westwood. And as secular of an area that Westwood can be, when you open the door to the Bight, it's as if you have entered an entirely different world. In the Bight, only hechshered kosher food is permitted. And in the Bight, the majority of women cover their hair and wear skirts down to their ankles. And in the Bight, the use of electricity on Shabbat is forbidden, and an egalitarian service, well, that's unheard of. And so for one semester, I was the odd woman out, because here I was a woman, yes, who keeps kosher, who keeps Shabbat, but I was a woman on the verge of applying to rabbinical school. And I was living in a house where the majority of people certainly would not count me in a minion. And yet for 3 months, the Bight, well, the Bight was my home. As my roommate and I watched the news over and over again, the planes crashing into the towers, the head of the Bight called all of the members of the Bight into the kitchen to make an announcement. You see, he was just told that Jewish buildings were under threat, that the Jewish community was worried about copycats, and anyone living in or near a Jewish building or a synagogue or a Hillel should be made aware of that news. And so the Bight manager said, "We completely understand if you want to leave. For those of you who live in the Los Angeles or the Orange County areas, feel free to go home. It's perfectly understandable." And I thought about the quick 45 minutes it takes to get down to the 405 to be with my family in Orange County on that day. But then I looked around. And I looked around at the Jewish stars hanging from the necks of my roommates, from the people living in the Bight. And suddenly I grasped my own and I realized that this is exactly, at this time and at this place, exactly where I needed to be. And what a strange realization. But at times of crises, at times of destruction and chaos, I think we Jews do comfort really well. The reason being that at the end of the day, we understand what matters most. I believe that Jews rely on other Jews in order to survive, whether physically, emotionally, spiritually, because at our core, it's those same Torah-driven values that sit at the center. But it's more than that. It's our collective Jewish memory. It's that memory of responsibility to each other that enables our Jewish souls to keep on ticking. Author and radio commentator Lewis Brown wrote in 1926, Through 30 and more centuries, he has wandered about on Earth. He has seen far-flung empires crack and crumble, and mighty people dwindle to naught. With their kings and priests, their tyrants and princelings, they have marched over him in vainglorious pride, only to fall and die by the roadside. But he, the Jew, lives on. We live on because we know that no matter the circumstance, we have greater threads connecting each and every one of us, weaving us to one another, connecting us more than tearing us apart. Think about that first game that each of us play when chancing upon a new community, near or far. Admit it, we play Jewish geography. We immediately look for the Jews in that city. We look for the synagogue when we're going on a new trip. We look for the JCC. We try to connect to this new Jewish best friend, because that's who they become, to someone that we know at home, and even if they're several degrees apart, just so that we feel the slightest connection to this otherwise unfamiliar place. But I think that the question still remains. Why does a Jew need to find another Jew in order to feel safe, whether it's here at home, in our synagogue, or far away? Why do we always feel the need to play that game? Why does a Jew need a Jew? Rabbi Israel Miller, Zichrono Livracha, wrote a beautiful High Holy Day sermon, and he titled the sermon, Who is a Jew? He explains that it's the memory of Judah which stirs within us as we seek the essence of why a Jew feels that instinctual bond to connect with another Jew. Rabbi Miller teaches that when the future of his brother Benjamin was in jeopardy, it was Judah who called out to Jacob with the words that ring true for each and every one of us. I will be responsible for him. From my hand, you shall seek him. It's a promise that we continue to make to each other. From the times of Judah, and listen to that name, it's Judah. We bear that name. As Jews, we promise to be responsible for each other, no matter the time, no matter the place, no matter the sibling rivalry. Yes, a memory of responsibility that is decreed so many years ago, and yet I believe it is that memory that keeps the Jewish people fighting and caring and reaching out to one another and to the other in times of distress. It's that memory that allows us to spread our light. So why did I feel so connected and so comforted by the presence of the Jews who lived in the Bight? Although religiously and politically and perhaps spiritually very different from my peers, they were Jews. And to be a Jew means being responsible for each other and reaching out to those who need our righteous light. Kol Yisrael Aravim Zeh LaZeh. And in knowing that whichever city or country or foreign land that we find ourselves, if faced with the gravest of dangers, towers tumbling down, a famine, an earthquake, without a question, we will take a Jew in, and not to the exclusion of others, but a Jew reaches out his hand to another Jew because we are family. David Ben-Gurion, Moses, Hannah Senish, Golda Meir, Sandy Koufax, Anne Frank. Our hearts stir. Our souls yearn when we hear the stories and the names of our people, because it is that collective memory that links one Jew to the next. Their struggles are our struggles. Their dreams are our dreams. And their survival is our survival. We stand next to each other in this congregation perhaps with very different stories, with very different aspirations, but one thing is clear. A Jew lives each and every day with a flame in his and her heart that must always be tended, must always be watched. It's the flame of Jewish continuity, of Jewish survival that stands on our shoulders. Rabbi Chanina taught, he who slaps a fellow Jew in the face, well, it's as though he has slapped the Shekhinah, the divine presence. Furthermore, someone who raises his hand, even in a threatening way to another Jew, even if he did not slap him, that person's called a wicked man. And if you take it just one step further, a Jew who decides not to hold up another Jew in their time of need, well, that's as if you've eliminated God from the picture altogether. On 9/11, then in 2001, and today, 9/11, 2010, we cry with God over the senseless hatred that was committed and for the many lives, the people of all religions, of all backgrounds, of all faiths that were lost. But on 9/11 then and 9/11 today, my flame is still burning. May we always stand side by side with our fellow Jew. May we always fight for the righteous, fight for those who cannot find their voice, and through our pain and through our joy, declare out loud that this is our solemn task. Sinai Temple, may our fire never burn out. Shabbat Shalom.